Small World is a three-way transoceanic conversation filmed and edited by Murrow and Friendly.
This is Edward Teller in Berkeley, California.
This is Bertrand Russell in London.
This is Small World, and this is Ed Murrow in Rome. Good evening. Tonight on Small World, two of the larger intellects of our time. Lord Bertrand Russell, philosopher, scientist, Nobel Prize winner, in many areas a nonconformist. And Professor Edward Teller, scientist, often referred to as the father of the H-bomb. One thing these two men have in common is a unique ability to make the scientific and the obscure intelligible to the layman. Lord Russell is in London, Professor Teller at his home in Berkeley, California. Gentlemen, about a year ago, Russia and the United States agreed to a cessation of the testing of nuclear weapons. So far as we know, no one has cheated. Why cannot that continue? Lord Russell?
I very much hope that it will continue. I think it would be a very great misfortune if this attempt to impose a ban upon tests fails. And I think the world in general will look rather closely at the negotiations to see where, if anywhere, the blame for failure will lie.
Professor Teller?
Well, I would say this. These negotiations have served as a symbol for peace. And peace is something most important. At the same time, there are real problems. You said, Mr. Murrow, that as far as we know, no one has cheated. We know today that had the Russians, in one of several ways, fired a nuclear shot or many nuclear shots in this time, we would not have any inkling that they have done so. The nuclear test cessation in an open country like ours is a reality. In a country like Russia, it is as good as their simple word, unsupported by any objective fact or observation. I think that if, and I do not know whether this is so, if the Russians continue testing and we do not, then within a few years, there will be only one strong military power in the world. That is Russia. Then, soon, there will be only one way of life, and that is the communist way of life. Unless we look at nuclear testing as the whole complex problem of armament, international relations, in a much more realistic manner, we are going to lose our fight for freedom.
May I say, in answer to that, that I view this whole problem in a rather different manner. I think that Dr. Teller has said there will be only one way of life. I say in reply that if the kind of attitude that Dr. Teller seems to favor continues to exist on both sides, then there will be not only one way of life, there will be no way of life. And I think that this protracted negotiation, filled with suspicion, is bound to lead sooner or later to the extinction of all human life. And it is for that reason that I think it's important negotiations should reach some conclusion, even if there be some slight risk that one side or the other is cheating. There is always that risk, but it is a lesser and not so terrible a risk as the risk of an unintended nuclear war.
I do not know how great the risk is for the Russians to cheat. In the past, they have been known to violate their word even when that was evident to the world. In this case, they can do so without being detected. However, there are more important questions to consider still. You, Lord Russell, have talked about no life. You seem to fear, obviously not for yourself, but you fear for all of us. And I don't think there is anybody who does not respect your sentiments. At the same time, I have read for many years with great interest and great admiration your work. And I have learned from many sources and largely from you that we should be led by reason and not by our fear. If I listen to my reason and not to fear, then I know that there is no real danger that human life on this earth will end. This is a problem about which I have worried for many years, painfully, ever since the Nazi menace made it necessary for us to embark on the investigation of the possibility of atomic explosion. And I know that there is no real danger unless there is not an insane individual, but a completely insane group, and unless the rest of us fail to undertake the appropriate countermeasures. Life on this earth will go on. What we want, what we need, is to be sure as we can be, not only that there will be continued life, but that there will be no war.
I should like to intervene and say that I'm very much interested to hear Dr. Teller so confident about the continuation of life. But I would say, and I would say this with all earnestness, that there are a great many people whose opinion one must respect who do not think that this is by any means a safe conclusion. And you will notice that in his statement that he was sure life would continue, one of his premises was that no government would be completely mad. Now, he and I have both lived through a period when there was a completely mad government of a great power, and we can have no security whatever that there won't be a similar madness at any moment, because after all, governments are not so wise as they think they are. And especially mad governments are not as wise as they think they are. And there may at any moment arise a mad government. It might be in a very small power, but if it possessed a store of H-bombs, as it could do, it could wipe us all out.
I think few people are as wise as they think they are. I am quite sure that I am even more foolish than I think I am. Yet, I have learned from Lord Russell not to trust authority, but to trust my own judgment if I have listened to every objective argument on every other side. And I know that today the instruments do not exist to bring about the disaster which Lord Russell is talking about. I know that it would be very difficult to make these instruments. And I say that it is not impossible only because I have become used to the idea that almost anything is possible.
May I now say a few words in answer to Dr. Tiller's, to my mind, terrifying optimism. My blood ran cold when I heard him minimizing the dangers. And now, I don't want to be rude to his child, but after all, the H-bomb is not the only weapon that science will ever invent. There are a great many worse weapons in store, and unless war can be avoided, it seems pretty certain that with the advance of science, these fears which Dr. Teller minimizes will come to be realized.
If there is a mad government, and I hope and believe there is none right now, if there is a mad government, this mad government will find ways and can find ways to wipe out whatever they want to wipe out, even if there are test bans and other restrictive regulations. A police force which is merely prohibitive has all these difficulties, but a police force which tries to police something which we know cannot be detected, for which we have now positive evidence that it cannot be detected, is a police force not more effective than the police force has been in the days of prohibition. And such police force encourages nothing but gangsterism.
I think that there is a certain lack of historical sense in the idea that you can get peace out of an arms race. Arms races in the past have almost always ended in war. And unless we can stop the arms race, it will just go on piling on, and new and worse weapons will be invented until Dr. Tiller's child is considered a humane sort of pop gun for children. That's the danger that we run, as I see it.
Do you remember, Lord Russell, the race in disarmament, when all free countries threw away their arms, and there was one country which armed? This mortal race of disarmament, which culminated in Munich and which brought about the tragedy of the Second World War. Do you remember, Lord Russell, when you yourself were expressing some approval of Munich? I think that unwise disarmament can be as dangerous as armament itself. There is one point, Lord Russell, in which I deeply agree with you. There is only one thing we must do. We must prevent war. It is quite clear that an arms race in itself is not good. But it is also quite clear that for us to stop unilaterally our race of armament is an extremely dangerous thing.
I was not arguing for unilateral disarmament. I was arguing for general disarmament. And the Munich business was very disastrous. I hoped at the time of Munich that perhaps a world war could be averted, and I was wrong. But that was a unilateral thing, and I'm not arguing for unilateral disarmament.
I would myself like to turn to the positive thing and like to see, how do you think, in a concrete and constructive way, how can we build a stable world community with common aims which will make the lot of mankind better and which will establish something like a world government in which I believe as fully as you do?
I think that we should not be able to get a stable world until we learn to have less suspicion of each other. And I think that's a thing that everybody's got to learn on both sides. Dr. Teller has talked as if we had justified suspicions of the Russians, but the Russians never had justified suspicions of us. And I don't think a Russian would agree to that. I'm not arguing as to whether it's true. I'm only saying that this is a view which would be retorted from the other side, and that if you're going to get stable peace in the world, you've got to get a mood where people are less opposed to each other. And I think that at the present moment, I don't say always, but now, Russia is much more prepared for disarmament than the West seems to be. I agree, of course, entirely with Dr. Teller that world government is the only thing that will give us any security at all. We can no longer hope to get security in any other way. But a world government will not work if there are in the world such hostilities as there are at present between Russia and the West. You've got to somehow get rid of that mood of hostility before you can get any kind of fruitful cooperation.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I am most reluctant to break into this interesting conversation, but we must pause now just a moment for a word from Olin Matheson.
When we think of brass, the first thing that comes to mind is the big brass band. One of the most noted names in brass is Western Brass, part of Olin Matheson. From its strategically located brass mills serving the nation's industrial centers comes brass to beautify, brass to last, like these modern chandeliers. Here in this mill, giant sandwiches of molten brass are toasted in ovens, later to be devoured by American industry for thousands of products, from cufflinks and lighters to home appliances. This is brass, one of the oldest metals known to man, molded by modern man into precision-polished objects of beauty, from hardware and hubcaps to statues. For no other metal is as timeless, as everlasting as brass. To further supply industry's growing demands for non-ferrous metals, Western Brass produces more than 40 copper-based alloys, each tailor-made for enduring beauty and quality. An important part of the work of Olin Matheson for you. Small World continues with Lord Bertrand Russell, Dr. Edward Teller, and Edward R. Murrow.
Lord Russell, I think that the first step which we can, you and I, take right now is to try to emphasize our points of agreement, which are many. One such point of agreement is that the first thing we have to do is to get rid of suspicions and fear. We should get rid of the unreasoning fear of all our destruction, insofar as this is unreasoning, and I think it is. But I ask, is it the best way to get rid of suspicions by introducing regulations such as not to make any more experiments with nuclear explosives, regulations which cannot be checked? Is it conducive to mutual trust if we have to enter into, or if we should enter in such an agreement when the Russians do not allow us to travel freely in their country? I think that the best way toward getting going with a program of mutual trust, of getting rid of our suspicions, is to have as much cooperation as ever possible toward common goals. If our scientists, our agriculturists, our students, people in all walks of life visit each other freely, if such exchanges are encouraged to the maximum possible extent, if secrecy is diminished, if people in this country can go wherever they like, as they do, and if in Russia they can go wherever they like, which they generally don't now, if this can be done, if we can get to know each other better, I think that will be a great step forward. What does a Russian think? If he can think what he wants to think, if he can say what he wants to say, I think this will be an enormous way forward toward mutual trust and toward peace. You in your country can say what you think. This is a wonderful thing. I in mine can say what I think. This is a wonderful thing. I have come from a part of the world where you now cannot say what you think. And once the freedom of speech is lost, I do not know when and how we can recover it.
Well, I think, as regards that, I entirely agree with the importance of free speech. I think we minimize the amount of free speech in communist countries, which is more than is generally supposed, and I think we enormously exaggerate the amount of free speech that is possible to a man without suffering serious damage in Western countries. I think free speech is enormously important, but I think the Russians are getting a little better about it than they were, and I think we may hope that if we treat them in a friendly manner, there will be more of it. I've had a good deal to do in recent years with some Russian scientists. I haven't had any contact with Russian politicians, but I have had with scientists. And I've found that they seemed, as far as I could see, to be very like Western scientists, with about the same degree of general wishing for the welfare of mankind, about the same mixture of virtues and defects. And I found also that they were extremely grateful to find that they were not treated as wicked men. They've been for a long time treated as wicked, and it tends to make you wicked if you're treated so. And I noticed, as Dr. Tiller was talking, that he was saying that friendly contact was the great thing, and was at the same time hurling accusations of deceit and treachery against the Russians. And as long as you keep on doing that, whether justifiably or not, you can't hope to make friends with them. They can't be made friends with that way. The only way you can make friends with people is to treat them as if they were decent human beings, which I believe that the scientists, at any rate in Russia, are, and I think some of the others too, more so than we think. And I'm very much afraid that we in the West allow ourselves a degree of self-righteousness which seems quite absurd to everybody except ourselves. We're not half so virtuous as we think we are. Nobody is.
I know, and this is a simple fact, that freedom of speech is severely curtailed in Russia. This is a different system, a different way of life. And this difference, which I have tried in my own life, from which I have fortunately escaped, is a great difference in the system. And I'm sure that you agree that we have to work toward the goal of changing this, of opening up Russia. I know the Russian scientists now are free to accept scientific truth as Mendel's laws, that they are no longer prevented from talking about relativity and quantum mechanics as they have been a few years ago. I am happy about this much progress, but I also have no reason to believe that on political matters the Russians are free to express themselves, and I know we are free to express ourselves. I don't want to exaggerate. There are all these cases where there are some misunderstandings or restrictions. But we have the ideal of freedom of speech. We believe in it, we want to perfect it, we work toward it, and I think this is the greatest treasure, the greatest of all the freedoms. Because if you have it, the rest of the freedoms follow. If you don't have it, the rest of the freedoms get lost.
I don't agree with you at all. I don't think you're right about this. I've been put in jail by my own government because I said things they didn't like. If you call that freedom of speech, it isn't exactly freedom. I've been in your country completely ostracized for saying things that a certain section of your population didn't like. And I don't think it's true that we have so much freedom of speech in the West as we think we have. And as for freedom in the East, well, I agree it's lamentably deficient. But still, I found recently I can get articles printed in Russian magazines that do express quite wholeheartedly what I think. And I think we ought to be very careful not to be too self-righteous, too content with what we've got, which is not half as much as we think. And also not to be too unwilling to admit the very real progress that has occurred in Russia recently.
To the extent there is progress in Russia, and I think there is, we should enjoy it, and we do enjoy it. and we should work on it. But I think on these points we so completely agree. I think it would be much more interesting to see how, in various ways, for instance, by putting nuclear energy to work for peaceful purposes, we can make progress toward a better life, if possible, in a way of joint enterprise. Can you say something about this, Lord Russell, how you imagine this could be done?
Yes, certainly. I should like to say something about it. I think the possibilities of good in our present world are quite enormous, and especially by the utilization of atomic energy. But I must say this, so long as the present tension continues in the world, great countries will devote their surplus energy and their surplus work to perfecting means of killing each other. And so long as they do that, every technical advance is a misfortune to the world and will continue to be so until such time as the arms race has been stopped. And I say that the utilization of atomic energy or of any kind of labor-saving device, while the present system in the world continues, is merely a means of putting more people into the business of killing each other, which I think is a beastly and absurd and a silly business. And I don't like to see anything that increases its virulence.
Lord Russell, I think that you exaggerate, that you greatly exaggerate. And I think I would like to direct your attention toward the positive side of the picture. We, a group of us, are trying, and trying with some success, to divert a considerable portion of our effort, as much as we possibly can, to peaceful uses of nuclear explosives.
Sorry, gentlemen, but our time has run out, and I must interrupt. This conversation between Lord Russell and Professor Edward Teller extended for something more than an hour. We shall give you the second part of it next week at this time. Next week on Small World, we continue this discussion between Lord Russell and Professor Teller on the subject of the banning of nuclear tests and related subjects. Good night and good luck.